We're going to go back to what I had originally said we were going to talk about, imaging strategies for pediatric appendicitis. Dr. Kenny.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to speak about imaging strategies for pediatric appendicitis. And I do not have any relevant financial relationships. My disclosures, however, include that I worked with multiple research fellows on this work. It's not just mine. I have a great group of surgical partners that have gone along with some of these ideas and a very supportive hospital quality improvement team to make this possible. So I figured out that I've been playing golf longer than this guy, but I would never try to tell him how to swing a golf club. And although I've been managing appendicitis and diagnosing appendicitis as long as many of you or longer, I'm not going to try to tell you how to diagnose appendicitis, or at least I'm cautious about trying to do that, and yet I'm still going to try to tell you my opinions on it. We're going to cover a variety of different things here in establishing the diagnosis. Over the past 50 years, many of us learned about diagnosing appendicitis just with exam and historical factors. We used Cope's book on the early diagnosis of the acute abdomen. And in the 1980s, clinical decision rules started to be developed, as well as the use of ultrasound and CT scan, and more recently MRI. So we'll touch on a number of these different ways to diagnose appendicitis. But first, I wanted to start with a case study. This was recently a friend of mine called me to say that his son, who's early in college, so still a late teenage person, was at a local hospital. This was a Thursday night around 5 o'clock. And he was seen for abdominal pain. He had a CT scan that confirmed appendicitis. And there was a plan for an appendectomy in the morning. And I reassured my friend, even though I was a little concerned that they had required a CT to make the diagnosis. And I was also a bit concerned they were waiting till the next morning, but I still, you know, gave him reassurance, and I called him the next day to see how things went and found that he had actually returned to his hometown, which is about 2 hours away, and had a second CT to confirm the diagnosis, that the first images taken, he was told, were too soon after oral contrast. And then he underwent an uncomplicated laparoscopic appendectomy on the day following admission. So he thanked me for my help, even though I felt like I really hadn't helped him very much. There's a lot of problems with this story, in my view. You know, why was a CT scan needed at all? Why did the second institution not simply trust the report of the first institution, let alone seeing the images? Were the images even sent to the second institution and reviewed? It sounds like they were, because they said they wanted enteral contrast, but many radiologists tell us not to use enteral contrast for diagnosis of appendicitis. And both these hospitals are excellent hospitals that do a lot of appendectomies, so these are not an unusual event for them. This is how they do business. So let's start with what we all know about the diagnosis of appendicitis. We know the typical symptoms and signs. We also know that these symptoms and signs are present in less than 50% of the youngest children. We know that perforation is uncommon in the first 24 hours, but it's frequently found beyond 48 hours, and especially frequently found in younger children. And we also know that the intensity of our diagnostic measures has to be balanced with our negative appendectomy rate, but this is not a simple inverse ratio. So first, no imaging, clinical evaluation alone. Traditional history and physical examination, it has a negative appendectomy rate up to 20%. Now, realistically, that's probably in this audience more in the 5 to 10% range. But it is dependent on an experienced examiner. It perhaps is the best strategy for a teenage male, but for other patient groups, it most patients really do require an imaging study. Clinical prediction rules, as I said, were developed in the 1980s. The first score was developed out of a retrospective review of pediatric patients, a prospective score called the Pediatric Appendicitis Score came around in 2002. But these are mainly useful for ED and primary care physicians and may be helpful in deciding who should have imaging. This is a study that compared six different scores that are studies from six different scores that are in the literature. And when you can see all of the clinical criteria that they use to make the diagnosis and develop their score. But the researchers that did this review felt that these clinical rules are really inadequate. And this is a verbatim quote from their conclusion, and that is that high quality, well-validated, and consistently high-performing clinical prediction rules for children with suspected appendicitis was not identified in their study, and that further study is needed before a clinical prediction rule can be recommended for routine use in pediatric practice, even though we all know these are being used by our emergency physicians in many hospitals. But the bottom line is, most patients need imaging. So if imaging is needed, what imaging should be done and when should it be done? So here's a study that was done in the state of Washington recently, where they looked at the Surgical Outcomes Registry, and that included both adult and pediatric hospitals. They looked at over 2,500 children who had appendicitis in over a four-year period. Virtually all of them had some form of preoperative imaging in the state of Washington, which is probably true in all the 49 other states as well. But my concern is that over half of these patients had a CT scan as their first study. This is probably the state of what's going on in the country, though. So CT scan, it is very accurate. It allows us to have a very low negative appendectomy rate, but it's somewhat expensive compared to other imaging modalities, and there is the concern about radiation exposure. Of the nearly 4 million CT scans annually in the United States, these are projected to cause about over 4,000, almost 5,000 cancers in children. Ultrasound does not involve radiation, it's less expensive, but it's very user-dependent and relatively inaccurate because of that, and it's not always available. In Memphis at Le Bonheur Children's Hospital, they developed a clinical pathway where they combined a clinical decision rule along with a lot of use of ultrasound, and they were able to demonstrate an excellent sensitivity and specificity with a very low CT scan use rate. They had about two-thirds of their patients getting ultrasounds and a very low negative appendectomy rate. But at the same time that that work was being done, we at Nationwide also looked at our CT utilization and found that we were using this for over 50% of our patients. When we talked to the surgeons about this, it was we found that the ultrasound was not really available 24/7. And it was not really reliable. Even the radiologists discouraged us from using ultrasound to diagnose appendicitis. Surgeons didn't trust the results, and full visualization of the appendix was seen in only 45% of patients. Most of the reports at that time, in fact, all the reports at that time were narrative reports, and the radiologists told me that they preferred to give a narrative description, and there were a lot of missing elements because it was not a checklist. It was very open to interpretation, which may still be true in some of your hospitals. It was very imprecise because there were no size criteria, and it was often without a definitive diagnosis. So we created a structured report, which used standardized size criteria. We looked at which secondary signs were beneficial in helping with the diagnosis, and then we had a structured and actionable interpretation. So the size criteria are listed here, both the diameter and the wall thickness. We felt that these secondary signs of hyperechoic periappendiceal fat, local bowel dilation, fluid collection consistent with an abscess were helpful. We felt that these other secondary signs, free fluid or lymphadenopathy, were not, and so therefore were discounted. And then the interpretation included either one of four items that the radiologist had to commit to. and that would be either a normal appendix or appendix that was not visualized or partially visualized without secondary signs, or appendix that was not visualized but did have secondary signs, or one that clearly showed appendicitis. The ultrasound template that we used was really a checklist, and this includes all of the items on it, and you can see the impressions where the radiologist had to choose one of those four impressions. And this is just an example of what the old template looked like versus a new template, much more information in the new template. So the new template was distributed to radiology staff. It used evidence-based diagnostic criteria. There were multiple meetings to clarify these concerns and improve the template use. Compliance to the reports was audited, and individual feedback was given to the radiologists. And importantly, the availability of radiologists and technologists for ultrasound was increased to 24/7. For the surgeons, there was a lot of education about how to use the template. The results were discussed to improve understanding of the reports. The ultrasound was encouraged as a first study in the emergency department. We didn't place any restrictions on CT use, but we did have a lot of efforts to try to decrease CT scans. And the rapid ultrasound readings fostered rapid patient triage, so the emergency department physicians really liked this idea. When you look at the results before and after the template, there were no differences in age, gender, or race distribution between the two periods. And again, looking before and after the template, the sensitivity increased markedly, as did the negative predictive value. And importantly, the non-diagnostic exams were virtually eliminated. This is a control chart that looks at the use of CT scans and the percentage of patients getting a CT scan to rule out before an appendectomy. And when we implemented the standardized template, we had about 45% to 50% of our patients undergoing CT scans. This immediately dropped and continued to decrease as we had use over time, to a point where it was around 15%, a 66% decrease in the use of CT scans. And you can see the ultrasound report compliance, because the radiologist didn't always use it at first, but that improved over time. And when you put these two together, you can see that as the compliance is going up, the use of CT scans is going down. Now, that's not a cause and effect there, but it is a very strong correlation. If you compare the compliance to the template, the non-compliant reports to compliant reports, you can see that the specificity is much better, the negative appendectomy rate is improved, and the CT scan rate is much lower. So how did we get the radiologists to agree on this? We had radiology champions on our team. We had constant timely feedback. We had developed some reporting software that allowed them to place templates in their reports. And the templates turned out to be easier than the narrative, and that's why they adopted it. What we did not do, we didn't use any guidelines. We encouraged rather than mandated these changes, and we avoided comparative data or publishing the comparative data because we didn't use a punitive strategy. Why did this work? I think mainly because of a simple shared goal to reduce radiation, the inclusion of thought leaders from each department, strong support from our QI department, increased confidence in the report was probably the most important thing, but also among our ED physicians, rapid triage of the abdominal pain patients. We showed in a subsequent study that these changes can be durable, and even though we decreased our monitoring frequency, in the end of this period, you can see that our use of CT scan rate is below 10%. We've decreased radiation. We also decreased the cost to the hospital. Even though we're doing many more ultrasound scans, the overall cost was decreased by about $100,000 a year. So, how are we doing currently, both at our hospital and hospitals across the country? We have to give a shout out to Sean Rangel for this work. Any of you who are involved in Nisqually Pediatric know that Sean put together this targeted appendectomy report, which really allows us to see how we're doing. And this is from the calendar year 2017. And just a couple of the definitions that the report uses, there are over 14,000 cases from 106 hospitals. They're all pediatric hospitals. In the preoperative imaging was looked at, but especially the American College of Radiology guidelines, which basically try to encourage that an ultrasound be done before a CT scan. So that's compliance with those guidelines. And we also looked at the normal appendectomy rate. So overall, there were 26% of patients in the database were complicated, which would be as expected. The normal appendectomy rate was very low at 2.6%. And in my opinion, the CT scan use is too high. It's still 22% among average, but you can see that there are many hospitals in the light blue over here that are doing this for over half their patients, and some for 100% of their patients are getting a CT scan. As far as MRI utilization, we're not currently using it in Columbus, and probably there are too few hospitals that are using MRI, but then there's also some hospitals that are probably using it more often than they need to. Compliance with the ACR guideline is overall about 64%, but here you can see that there are still many hospitals that are not doing an ultrasound first.
Hold on one second. Your screen is blue.
What happened?
Looks like we're back up, so we'll continue and take the questions at the end. Thanks.
And I don't have too much more for you, so hang in there. I think I mentioned that in this overall cohort of all of these hospitals, the rate of normal appendix in the appendectomy was very low at 2.6. The CT scan use overall was too high at 22%, with some centers very high. The use of MRI is rare at only a few hospitals using it, but the ones that are using it seem to be using it probably more often than is needed. And the compliance with the American College of Radiology guidelines of using an ultrasound before CT is only 64% in these children's hospitals, which is too low. But this is the really key slide to end the presentation, and that is, if you is trying to look at comparing your CT scan rate with your negative appendectomy rate. And if you see this line going across here, this is the cohort rate, average cohort rate of CT scans at 22%, so you'd like to be down in this area here. And this is the negative appendectomy rate along this line of 2.6%, so you'd like to be inside this box here. And the concerning thing here is that 75% of these hospitals are outside the box. So this is something that if you're part of NISQIP, you can find out where you're at with this, and you can look at this report and tell you very quickly whether you are where you need to be. So in conclusions, most patients do benefit from imaging by having low rates of negative appendectomy. Culture change is really needed to avoid CT scans. You should monitor CT scan rates at your hospital. Ultrasound should be used preferentially with repeat of an inadequate ultrasound for an outside study. Repeat for if the outside study is inadequate. And also we should consider repeat after a period of observation for a non-visualized appendix in a patient with abdominal pain. You can improve your ultrasound interpretation and availability by working together with your radiologist and ensure that they're actually spending enough time looking for that non-visualized appendix. An MRI may be a modality that we should be using more often. I think we should be using it more often in Columbus, for example, especially when your ultrasound remains non-diagnostic. So I really appreciate your attention, and I apologize for the technical difficulties.